Welcome to another episode of the Left of Lansing podcast with Pat Johnston. A progressive insight into Michigan's political and cultural world. And of course, an entertaining podcast designed to shine a light on how to make Michigan's political machine work for the people. Now, from the Left of Lansing headquarters, located in his attic, here's the award-winning Pat Johnston.
Oh, yeah. Welcome to another installment of Michigan's premier progressive podcast. I am Pat Johnston, back at it after taking a week off for Thanksgiving and just, you know, needing a little break from everything in the real world to be with family and friends and, you know, to watch a little football over the long weekend. And I have to make this observation, if I may. Yes, there were some good things and some bad things that happened during the Biden years, something that we can debate forever and ever. But one thing never did happen during the Biden administration, and that is Michigan never lost to Ohio State. Just thought I'd make that observation. Coming up in a few moments, the Michigan Democratic Party Rural Caucus Chair Mark Ludwig will join the show. I'll pick his brain on where Democrats fell short on their messaging in this past election, maybe also in the past few elections, actually. But Mark is also running to become the next chair of the Michigan Democratic Party. He believes being from a red county and dealing with rural voters throughout his professional political life will provide a huge benefit to Michigan Democrats who, for the most part, are losing rural voters and working class voters across the entire state. So Mark Ludwig will join me here in just a few. Hey, I just want to mention it now before I forget, and I will have to contact our show voice, Jessica, to please update some of our liners on how to get a hold of me because Left of Lansing is also now on Blue Sky. I had a bit of a change of heart during the last month or so on this whole thing. I did believe, and I think I even stated it here, I believed in not giving up ground on Elon Musk's Twitter and that we on the left had to keep a presence there, not to surrender. But while my account is still there, I haven't really done much posting there anymore. I noticed that since Elon and his people changed the algorithms of Twitter, suddenly I was getting inundated with racist, misogynistic, right-wing garbage on my timeline, people that I never followed. And not only that, but many of my posts weren't getting circulated like they used to, and I wasn't seeing posts from people that I had been following for years. So I made the decision to jump over to Bluer Skies. And you know what? It's been awesome getting to follow people again and read posts from people that I followed for years on Twitter. Now, it's got some kinks to work out for sure. And I do hope that sports publications also eventually decide to start posting more on Blue Sky. Also, I hope that they'll find a way for people to post videos longer than a minute. Still, though, not bad for a little site that's growing remarkably fast. So you can still follow me on Twitter, Facebook, and the gram, but I'll be doing more posting and commentary on Blue Sky. Just search for Left of Lansing. And of course, you can always contact me, leftoflansing@gmail.com. People have fought for decades to realize this. Now, a lot of people are really pissed off because they feel like it's been squandered. That's a quote by Detroit Action's Steve Lawrence in a fantastic piece by the American Prospect's David Dayton titled, "Michigan Democrats Deliver Lame Duck Disappointment. The First Democratic Trifecta in 40 Years is Ending with Internal Dissent, Stalled Legislation, and Up to $10 Billion in Corporate Subsidies." Now, I'm not bringing up Mr. Dayton's piece because he happened to mention this podcast in that article, which was very nice of him to do, so thanks for listening, David. In fact, I noticed the article first thing on Wednesday morning because it appeared on Blue Sky, and I was really surprised to see him cite this podcast. So thank you, David. But he did do a meticulous job at illustrating the destructive corporate culture that dominates Lansing politics and how the Democratic leadership in Lansing has spent most of its precious time bowing down to corporate interests rather than helping the people they claim they represent. Now, this isn't a new revelation to many of you who follow Michigan politics or listen to this podcast. When I first started this whole thing back in 2019, it was right after Gretchen Whitmer became governor. And while the legislature was still run by a MAGA right-wing Republican Party, there was finally a glimmer of hope that Whitmer could put a stop to some of the most egregious Republican policies. And of course, yes, I understood some deal making, I'll repeat that, would have to take place, you know, when it came to terms with the budget and things like that, since no one had complete power. I got it. But while I gave Whitmer credit for her campaign and her natural ability to speak to voters by sounding, you know, normal, there was one major issue that we covered here on the podcast that made me and a great many Michiganders throw their hands up and yell, "Wait, what the hell's going on here?" And you recall, if you listen back in 2019, that's when the Democratic governor, Gretchen Whitmer, held a signing ceremony at the Grand Hotel during the corporate lobbying event known as the Mackinac Policy Conference. Now, this is an event where big money donors get to hobnob with each other, including some of the major politicians in Lansing. Anyway, at this 2019 event, Whitmer signed an auto insurance reform bill, that's what it was called, in which she joined hand in hand with then Republican Speaker of the House Lee Chatfield and Republican Senate Minority Leader Mike Shirkey. It was a Republican bill, but was praised by Democrats such as Whitmer and the then Democratic minority leaders, and also by Detroit Mayor Mike Duggan. Now, it's no secret that Michigan has some of the highest auto insurance rates in the country, but partially that was because it offered personal injury protection to cover the high healthcare costs for those seriously injured in auto crashes. But with this bill, it offered tiers of coverage that basically drained the money used to cover the costs for the people and the families who really needed it after some serious auto crashes. Not only that, the bill contained loopholes to make insurance companies thrilled, like allowing insurance companies to group insurance risk by geographical territories. That was in quotation marks. Detroit Mayor Duggan touted the bill as a way to save Detroiters $500 a year in savings. But as Detroit Public Radio noted, those savings never happened. Here, I'll give you a quote from this story that was written by Annelle Scott earlier this year. And it says, "Detroit Mayor Mike Duggan was pivotal in helping pass the auto insurance reform law in 2019, hoping that it would save people over $500 per year. But that's not the case for most Detroiters and Michiganders living in majority black neighborhoods, partly because loopholes in the law allow insurance companies to still group insurance risk by geographical territory." Okay, so Detroiters are still paying one of the highest auto insurance rates compared to other big cities across the country. So this bill, everyone, was a massive, massive giveaway to the insurance lobby and a massive, massive failure for average Michiganders. Now, last year, the Democratic State Senate passed a package of bills that reformed some of the so-called reforms from the original bill, including increasing reimbursement rates for medical providers who care for those seriously injured in car crashes. Yet, that bill has not passed the House, has not passed the legislature, and with just days remaining in the lame duck schedule, it's unknown if these reforms will ever pass. And I spent many shows back then talking about the harms this new auto insurance, quote-unquote, reform law would do to Michiganders across the state. And I talked with activists, politicians, and those in the medical field who warned us how this bill would hurt so many people while failing to save anyone money. It was the first real disappointment that I had with Governor Whitmer. And I have to tell you what, I'm still astounded that she still stands by this law today, while not standing up for those who got screwed by the law. It still astounds me. It astounds me that she really believed this would get her into good graces within the MAGA Republican circles, because you know what? It didn't. Just a year later, House Speaker Chatfield and Senate Minority Leader Shirkey would celebrate when many MAGA supporters stormed the state capitol with guns and Confederate flags in opposition to Whitmer's executive orders during the COVID pandemic. That's how they treated her after passing their precious auto insurance reform bill. It was a precursor or a blueprint of what would happen on January 6th of 2021, by the way. Oh, and there were some in the press loving the bipartisan nature of the whole ceremony up there at Mackinac Island, showing how both Democrats and Republicans could come together in the name of bowing down to the powerful insurance lobby at the expense of the everyday Michigander. Oh, and it was such a heartfelt moment. It really was a heartfelt moment for many in the Lansing media intelligentsia. But for many of us, it provided a stark reality of what the people were up against. Whitmer was no progressive on that issue. Now, she's an effective communicator, as I said, no doubt, and her standing up to Trump and MAGA during the pandemic did provide many of us with a jolt of energy during the 2020 campaign. And her stance on abortion rights after the Supreme Court erased Roe v. Wade was admirable, but it was also kind of a political no-brainer. And it did help. I'll give her credit, though. Her backing and her words did help pass the voter-approved constitutional amendment on abortion rights. So I have given credit when credit is due to Governor Whitmer on many times here on this podcast. And when Democrats finally gained control of the state legislature in 2023, I congratulated Whitmer on signing bills that the Democrats passed early on, from repealing Right to Work for Less, gun safety reforms, erasing the 1931 zombie anti-abortion law, and expanding LGBTQ plus rights, to repealing the pension tax, expanding the earned income tax credit for families, using 100% renewable energy by 2040. And providing free meals for all public school children. And I congratulated the progressive Democrats who passed those bills, many of which Whitmer didn't exactly campaign on. Early on, I think Democrats pushed Whitmer in a more progressive direction. But as the American Prospect's David Dayton highlights in his story, ever since that flurry of legislation during the first few months of the Democrats gaining the majority, things then started to get bogged down a bit. And why? Well, as I've already discussed here, and as Mr. Dayton points out in his story, because of the corporate subsidies, or the battle for corporate subsidies. I have stated endlessly on this podcast how much I loathe that Michigan engages in that race to the bottom against other states, in which they fight over how much that they're going to bribe corporations to set up shop in their states. I mean, I hate that practice. It's a loser practice. I remember talking with Democratic State Senator Mallory McMorrow in her very first year in the state legislature, in the state Senate, and it was also the first year of this podcast. And I remember how she argued that instead of flooding cash and incentives to corporations, perhaps the best way to attract companies here to the state is to develop the talent base through education here in the state, and also increase spending on infrastructure needs. She thought that was a better way to use our money, and I agreed. I mean, you've heard me talk about the need for transit ad nauseum here on this show, and I even had Democratic State Representative Jason Morgan on the show this year as he's fighting to increase transit spending. I mean, I just talked about Detroiters and Michiganders paying high auto insurance rates. How about, I know, this is maybe thinking outside the box here, but how about we provide transit opportunities for the people who don't want cars and who cannot afford cars because of the high auto insurance rates? Yet, once they got into power, Governor Whitmer's primary concern was shelling out more and more corporate subsidies. David Dayton writes, and I'm quoting here, "Corporate giveaways that have passed or are expected to in the lame duck session could push Michigan's subsidy bill for 2023 and 24 as high as $10 billion, around $1,000 for each resident during the first Democratic control of government since 1984. It's closer to Reaganomics than any left-leaning policy, said Sean McBrady, state director for Clean Water Action Michigan. Meanwhile, bills dealing with housing, criminal justice reform, environmental health, and other priorities have been delayed and could run out of time." First, glad to see that good friend of the show, Sean McBrady, was spot on there with his quote. It is more like Reaganomics, but yet this is what Whitmer and the Democratic leadership are prioritizing in Lansing. It is maddening. We've got good progressives in the state house, like Dylan Wagela, who's appeared here a few times and who told Mr. Dayton in that article that the Republican leadership is also opposing more corporate subsidies and instead saying that maybe we should spend more money on infrastructure. And Representative Vigila said, I thought that's something Democrats should be saying. Yeah, he's right on. Instead of finding ways to give more corporate handouts to GM, Google, or Ford, whatever, it's time for Democrats to start fighting for the people again. And it's getting bipartisan support from the voters. I mean, our side won on this issue. We were always the party that was against giving corporations more money and fighting for the working class. I mean, that's what this whole thing shows me. That's what this past election showed me. Yes, did some Michiganders vote for Trump for racist, misogynistic, and Christian nationalistic reasonings? Of course they did. Hell, we just saw right-wing Republican State Representative Josh Shriver call for the elimination of gay marriage. Republicans are who we know they are. But I'm not going to completely blame all the voters for feeling like they are being abandoned and that they aren't being heard when it comes to the state of the economy. I'm not. Look, you can get mad at me. Go right ahead. You can get mad at me all you'd like. But I feel like some voted for Trump because for some reason they saw him as the change candidate. But also, many Detroiters and Metro Detroiters sat out of the election because they didn't see Democrats really fighting for them. And that's why David Dayton, in his American Prospect story, quoted a tweet that I highlighted from progressive Democratic State Representative Betsy Cafia up around the Traverse City area, in which Cafia said, in exasperation over the lack of movement on some strong progressive bills still sitting and languishing in Lansing during this lame duck session, she said, if the Democratic leaders have a problem with using the power that we have while we still have it to protect the most vulnerable in our state, I don't know why the hell they're a Democrat. Mr. Dayton also talked with my guest from a few weeks ago, Progressive Democratic State Representative Emily Diebendorf, who's also expressed their frustrations with the Democratic leadership's priorities. And Dayton noted that Diebendorf has several criminal justice reform bills, including a bill expanding family visitation and another to screen law enforcement personnel for affiliation with hate groups. And Diebendorf also has a homeless bill of rights, affordable housing, tenant rights, and other bills waiting to receive a vote on the floor. Not to mention, Democrats also have polluter pay they could pass, ensuring that companies, rather than the taxpayers, clean up their environmentally hazardous messes. It's sitting right there. It is a popular bill, yet it's just sitting there. Oh, but the Democratic leadership is working with Republicans, apparently, on finding ways to water down the minimum wage increases and the paid sick leave days granted by the state Supreme Court recently because hurting the workers is always, always a bipartisan effort. Always. Here's what Representative Diebendorf said on this show just a couple of weeks ago about the frustrations of dealing with this Democratic leadership. Listen.
Where I am frustrated is that we face a moment where moderate Democrats would like to blame progressives for us losing control of the House. That just simply is not the case. We did not have a majority that prioritized and centered progressive policies. We had to fight like hell to try to shift anything towards progressive values. If anything, if we made any mistake, we led with a lot of apprehension and fear, and we have left a lot of our Democratic friends and allies feeling disillusioned and left out. We need to do criminal justice reform still. We need to do housing. We need to work on civil rights in several layers, in several realms for different communities. And we have not done that as much as we could have with the power that we had. I'm worried that because we have painted progressives as wrenches in the system, when it's really what progressive policies are really what our communities wanted, that we're going to end up leaving this legislative session with a lot of the folks most in need who were already questioning whether they could have leaders that represent them that much more disengaged from politics.
I feel like the so-called moderate Democrats, and again, I'll just say it, I don't know exactly what constitutes a moderate Democrats. So anyone who tells you they're a moderate, have them explain to you what that exactly means, because I don't think they could. Anyway, I feel like that the so-called moderate Democrats squandered away a chance to really show how they will always fight for all Michiganders. They squandered it completely. Rather than giving all of its time to please GM and billionaire real estate developer Dan Gilbert with a $250 million for a Renaissance Center grant, maybe this election showed that the Democratic leadership should really start caring for the people again. Considering how GM just announced the layoffs of over 1,000 workers in Warren, Michigan, maybe now's not the time to hold signing ceremonies with that company. Maybe. But hey, what do I know? What do I know? I'm just some stupid guy in Gratiot County with a little podcast. But what I do know is that Democrats have lost the presidency, lost Congress, and the Michigan State House. And I do know that people want to know that you are fighting for them and not just for the corporations. And people would like to know that you really give a damn about the daily struggles of their lives. As Representative Diefendorf said in that David Dayton piece, the governor can show that she's for the people by prioritizing all those needs that are not being heard. Whose side are you on? Whose side are you on, Governor Whitmer and the Democratic leadership? Whose side? Let me know what you think at leftoflansing@gmail.com. You're listening to LOL.
It's Michigan's premier progressive podcast, Left of Lansing with Pat Johnston. If Pat's brand of progressive pontifications is getting you all riled up and you'd like to give him a piece of your mind, or if you'd like to tell him he's doing an outstanding job and to keep up the great work, just email him. That's leftoflansing@gmail.com. Do you have stories you think Pat must know about or guest ideas for future episodes? That's leftoflansing@gmail.com. Want to share your thoughts on how to grow Michigan's population or which flavor of Faygo Pop is the best? It's rock and rye, by the way. Just email Pat, leftoflansing@gmail.com. Now, here's Pat.
So I'm going to do a show here for the next 3 weeks, and then I'm going to take both Christmas week and New Year's week off before I come back. Look, it's been a year, to say the least, and I will need those 2 weeks to just kind of regroup mentally and physically, and I'm guessing a few of you out there will probably have to do the same. But don't worry, I promise I will come back recharged and better than ever, because Michigan is my state. And the United States is my country, and I refuse to let everything go to hell without a fight. Please, if there's anything that I say here or in the Monday Musings or in the Friday Shorts, and you'd like to make some additional comments, just contact me, leftoflansing@gmail.com. I'd like to welcome back Mark Ludwig to the podcast here this week. Mark's the chair of the Michigan Democratic Party Rural Caucus, and he's also chair of the Allegan Conservation Board of Directors. Mark's been a guest here on the show earlier in the year as he gave his insights on where Democrats have or haven't been doing the best job at connecting with rural voters across the state. But the reason I've got Mark Ludwig here on the show this week is also because Mark is throwing his hat into the ring to become the next chair of the Michigan Democratic Party. The current chair, Lavora Barnes, of course, announced last month that she is leaving her post after 6 years. Mark Ludwig, thank you so much for coming back on Left of Lansing this week.
And I appreciate the time, and it's a pleasure to be back.
So while some people felt knocked out by this election, that's me included, and needed a little break here to recover from the disappointment that happened, it doesn't seem to be the case for you. If anything, I'd say it sort of has galvanized you even more to get more involved, and that is in being the next party chair. When and why did you decide to make the run for this position?
Pat, I have been thinking about this for some time. As we got past the election, it became, and particularly once it became clear, Chair Barnes was going to do the ultimate act of leadership, and that's when knowing it's time to go. And it was going to be an open seat. And at that point, I firmed up my decision to declare. And I'm the first candidate to declare for party chair, because I looked around at where the party was really failing to connect with people in Michigan. And it was once again in rural Michigan and elsewhere, which we can talk about more. But I really wanted to emphasize that. I thought, what would really send a message to Michigan voters as a move in the Democratic Party and electing somebody chair who is not of Southeast Michigan and who has been working on some of our real issues for some time, I think would send a real message. So here I am. And also, you know, I have just been obsessed with politics for 40 years, and I'm a natural political animal. And as I told my wife, I'm going to kick myself forever if I don't try this now. Personal and professional reasons.
I read your announcement on your Facebook page, which, by the way, I will provide a link to wherever people are listening to the show. And you said that the days of just relying on a strong ground game are over, because that used to be the case for many, many elections. And anyway, you also said that Democrats can't be afraid of appearing on places like, let's say, Fox News or podcasts such as Joe Rogan, and that Democrats need a leader who can talk to the bros. It's true that Democrats, I guess you could say, are struggling with male voters across the country and across the spectrum. Do you believe it's just a messaging problem and not appearing on certain platforms? Or are there other issues there as well?
Let me be clear, Pat, that we cannot throw anybody out of the coalition. Like, that everything we do well in the Democratic Party, we've got to still do well. And that includes ground game and things like Project 83, that is our year-round organizing effort across the state. All of that's important, and all of that's got to stay here. And then we got to get beyond that, and we got to go places that maybe we're not comfortable. I've said, you know, as rural caucus chair, I've said sometime, if you're running for office in rural Michigan and you're not going to church, you're cutting yourself out of a big pool of voters that could be voting for you. And just showing up is super important. And showing up includes going on podcasts that we might find difficult, going on hostile media, because guess what? On hostile media, they're going to lie about you if you're not there. So you might as well be there representing yourself, even if it's a difficult environment. And having lived in Allegan County, one of the reddest counties in the state for 20 years now, and having run for office three times, basically countywide, I am prepared for what anybody on the right might say to me about the Democratic Party. And I'm prepared with an answer about why all of ours are better than any of theirs every day of the week. And that's what I want to do.
Hey, Mark, I agree with you. I agree with you on, you know, I don't think it's a bad idea for Democrats to appear on shows in which maybe Democrats normally don't appear on, or where Democrats are usually painted in a negative light, or where Democratic ideals or ideas are ridiculed. I don't think it is a bad idea, because while you're not going to get everybody, of course, to agree with you, if you can just pull in maybe 10% of the listeners or viewers from those media sources, from the right or conservative, whatever you want to call it, if you can pull in around 10% who would say, hey, you know what, I never thought about that issue, or they hear an issue that a Democrat brings up and they say, you know what, I never considered that, I think that's still a win. That being said, though, Mark, and my question to you is, do you think Democrats do a good enough job appearing on as much media as possible? And that also includes progressive media, such as maybe a podcast like this. Don't get me wrong, I've had many Democrats appear on this podcast, but I still will get emails from Democratic representatives, Democratic senators, or at least from their offices, after I contact them and say, hey, would you like to come on the show? Oh, sorry, we're too busy. We can't really do that. I think that hurts Democratic messaging, too, because not only should you be going to enemy territory, but I think you should also be trying to reach as many people on what would be considered more your side, or at least would be more likely to agree with the stances that you take. So that way you can help spread the message as much as possible. I feel like the Democrats sometimes just don't do a good enough job on understanding what it takes to spread a message. That way it gets out to as many people as possible. I don't know. What's your take on that?
Yeah, we kind of have the worst of both worlds, because we're afraid of the far right and the far left. You know, we're afraid of being maybe tarred by the far right about the far left. And it's a difficult problem to solve. I don't want to minimize how hard it is to like thread the needle in modern politics, because really anything you say, somebody's going to have a criticism about it, and the ability to amplify that criticism. The media environment is heavily stacked against us and well-funded.
Yeah.
There's issues of concentration, you know, all of that. And, you know, kind of, so what? You know, that's the media environment. You got to accept it for what it is. And you got to go talk to people on the left, people on the right, people who are apolitical. There's this enormous pool of people in this country who do not vote because they think politics is BS. They don't understand politics. Their family wasn't political. They're cynical. Then they believe that it's not worthwhile. They see their friends fighting about politics, and they're, you know, kind of a conflict avoidant persons. How do we get them to vote? How do we talk to them? How do we serve them? This kind of missing 30% of people who could be voting. Here's my promise to you, Pat. The progressive people in the state, the progressive caucus in the Democratic Party, there will be room for them. The Black church that I've been to 2 weeks running, and I've heard encouraging things and discouraging things from the pastors. Not that they're not engaged in the Democratic Party, but that they don't feel as welcome as they used to in the Democratic Party.
Really?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And, you know, kind of following on to mixed signals I'm getting. I've heard people very happy about the One campaign, for those who aren't like super big political nerds. That's what we call kind of the institutional party that drops in from the DNC and the federal interests during the election years of a 2-year cycle. Some people super happy, just had great things to say about the One campaign. Some people, you know, very unhappy and feeling largely abandoned. Some of this is just, you know, failure has a thousand people who are blamed for it. And kind of zooming out on that, looking at it, we had a little bit of erosion everywhere. So I think trying to blame any particular person or issue or incident in this year's loss at the top of the ticket, I don't think is that productive. I think what's a more interesting question is, how did we lose with everybody? Like everybody. How did we lose with everybody? And I don't have an answer for all of that.
Oh, no. I get it. But the issue of accessibility is a real issue. That's what it sounds like from you. And I guess it's something that you like to tackle.
Yeah, let me see if I can boil it down for you. You know, how do Democrats do a better job of being accessible to the media? Or maybe the flip side of that is, you know, why are Democrats not as available as you might think they want to be?
But also Mark, I was also saying, Mark, then you can then piggyback to, are they making themselves as accessible to all voters?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I will tell you that transparency is a huge issue in Michigan government, period, because of how our laws are set up and the ability of political animals to operate kind of out of the spotlight. And it is well documented. And that's not my opinion. That's, you know, if you look at, you know, NGOs that rate transparency in state government, Michigan does not do well. And I think that culture of wanting to operate behind the scenes and in the shadows trickles down, and it jives beautifully with, you know, how many interest groups would prefer to operate politically in this state. This is a big company state. In some ways, there are major manufacturers that control huge numbers of jobs. They're all entangled with unions who have interesting Venn diagrams of interests, if you will. You know, they have an interest in their employer doing well and being able to do well in government and be able to get subsidies. I mean, you might even call it rent seeking if you were some kind of fancy economist. You know, this idea that because you're here and because you're big and powerful, that you should be able to attract incentives and such things. All of that gets mixed into this politics we play in Michigan. And that's the game. And the state party chair's got to go out there and play that game and has got to think about money and has got to think about making room for everybody in this big, broad coalition, which isn't always going to agree on everything. And it's a fascinating problem, and I'd love to take it on.
That's putting it mildly there, Mark. I think it indeed would be quite the endeavor. But look, since you just brought it up, I have to ask you this. Do you think Michigan Democrats in Lansing, and especially in the state legislature, do you think that they spent too much time these last 2 years in the majority, too much time and maybe too many resources on providing corporate subsidies to major manufacturers rather than maybe concentrating on the workers and on the communities in which they live?
I'm going to kind of duck here, Pat. And I just say that because where should the line be drawn? You know, usually the people who bring the money do have an ability to drive their agenda forward when sometimes other people do not. I will just say that plain.
Okay.
So, you know, what does it mean to vote for me for party chair as opposed to voting for the governor's candidate who, you know, he's in play? It means that I am not bound to the current interests of the Democratic Party, that interest in a way that someone who is really being put forward by the establishment is. And I think I can say, honestly, I'll be able to talk to a number of different constituencies in ways that many other people are not going to be able to. I'll give you an example. Because I've been involved with agriculture and the conservation establishment, you know, having been involved with the conservation districts and the USDA through the years, I will be the most well-informed chair about agriculture, one of our big industries in this state, in a very long time, in addition to having lived out here and interacted in the party. So I think I bring some unique things that will allow me to go places and do things that might be more challenging.
for other people if they were to be the chair of the party.
Mark, as you said earlier, you are from a red county on the west side of the state, Allegan County, and you've been fighting for progressive democratic values here for a long time in rural areas across the state. And to make this even more clear, Democratic State Representative Betsy Cafia in the 103rd District around Traverse City will be the lone, or at least one of the lone, Democratic representatives in the State House north of Saginaw, which is just astounding. Now, Representative Cafia, and I've been talking about it here a lot on this podcast over the last few weeks, has expressed her views and criticisms of where she thinks that state Democrats went wrong on messaging and why she was able to increase her voting numbers from the 2022 election. And Representative Cafia says that she was successful by just being able to listen to her constituents and to fight for a working class agenda. And she also said on the State Democratic Party's podcast called Party on the Peninsulas that the next state party chair should focus on building homegrown talent, supporting local parties, and, of course, being responsive to voters. And it sounds like Representative Cafia is sort of echoing the same things that you're talking about.
Absolutely. And I'd point to Representative Joey Andrews in the 38th also, who decisively won his election in a competitive purple district against Kevin Whiteford. For those who are super nerdy, you may remember that I ran against his wife when she was the state representative before the districts were redrawn. Both of those representatives know their districts inside and out. They can localize politics. They can talk about what they do in Lansing in the context of what they do of what needs to be done in their district. I know Representative Andrews better, but he is just brilliant on the math. A lot of the problems in the Michigan Democratic Party are not about our, you know, grand and beautiful vision for America. A lot of it is just making sure people are getting out there and maintaining county parties effectively, that we are answering the phone and returning calls. And it just really is about tending to our county parties better and our clubs in the more populated parts of the state. There's no Democratic Party in Iron County right now, where I grew up, which just kills me. And that's in spite of the efforts of the rural caucus. And we've been able to get three local county parties back up and going after they also, you know, kind of dechartered because of lack of personnel. It's not magic. It's building a bench outstate. There's some controversy. When I kicked this off, I met with another chair candidate in Detroit and talked with him about Project 83. And he's like, you know, I'm done with Project 83. Why are we spending all this money outstate? We should get back to Southeast Michigan where we belong. That sentiment's out there.
Wow.
You know, nothing is permanent in this party. We could turn our back on outstate again and decide that everything is about Southeast Michigan again. And we'd be wrong, but there's problems in Southeast Michigan as well that cry out for resources. So I think we're at a unique moment where we've really got to look at where the party's at and how we're going to run it and how we make sure that Project 83 is delivering value for its money. And some of that is just making sure that there's clear expectations and deliverables for every single position in the state party, and that we can talk about those to our donor base and say, this is what we're going to go get. We should talk. I mean, the voter turnout in Detroit is terrible. Terrible. It is 20 points lower than the rest of the state. There's a hell of a thing for a state party chair candidate to have to say. But, you know, we need to talk about these things and figure out what's going on. And look, do I know why that is? No, I don't, because I don't live over there. But I sure want to talk about that.
You know, that's the thing that this election showed, too, was, you know, not only did Republicans do well in most rural areas, but Democratic turnout, at least with its base voters, was down, especially in Southeast Michigan. So thanks a lot for bringing up about how the voter turnout was low in Detroit as well. And I don't understand why that person you said you talked to, why they were saying, well, maybe we just should just concentrate in Southeast Michigan, especially with the demographic changes that we're seeing happen across the state on the west side of the state alone. I mean, in Kent County, Kalamazoo, I mean, we're seeing that Democrats are picking up more votes there. I don't understand why we would want to abandon that.
I will let others speak for themselves, but I do think there's a real diversity of opinion, and there are a number of candidates out there talking about what we need to do. I'm also hearing that it sounds like we're not going to have our convention until at least mid-February, which means we don't really have to consolidate slates until the middle of January. So now is the time to really discuss what's going on in the party. I hope that all the candidates take it really seriously. The people I've talked to who are running for chair, some of them are, you know, they're longtime activists. They've got thoughts about how to change things and what needs to change, and we ought to have that discussion. The good Lord willing, Pat, we will consolidate down to a couple of candidates, and we'll put some slates together, and we'll talk with each other, and we'll figure out how to move this party forward, and we'll march off together into whatever's coming in this 4 years, really 2 years. We can shut the guy down in 2 years if we really get our act together and we get our other senator reelected and maybe do our part to get a seat or two back in the federal house. There's a lot Michigan could do if the other side really overreaches and they show every sign of overreaching spectacularly.
Yes, so, they do.
What are we doing to get ready for that? I feel a lot of people, and myself included, are quite rightly thinking about defense. But, you know, if they really go make a hash of things, this could very quickly pivot to going on offense because, you know, the fascists don't always see the counter-revolution coming, Pat. You know, sometimes they think it's just going to march right along and then Poland happens. And I'm not talking about like 1938. I'm talking about like last year. Poland shook off 10 years of fascism.
You know, I just have a few moments here. Mark, if I saw on your Facebook, and you can tell me if I'm right or wrong here, but I think you said something to the fact that, you know, that maybe that Howard Dean was perhaps the best national Democratic Party chair. I just was wondering, why do you think that?
Howard Dean, in addition to being a real populist Democrat who was capable of speaking to rural Americans when he ran for president, went on to be a DNC chair that instituted this 50-state program, who said, you know, we need to spend tens of thousands of dollars a month in these red states where we are not going to win very many elections. But over time, first, we will win city and county elections. And, you know, they're easier to win down there because the corruption's easier to see. And sometimes you beat them on corruption, even if they don't like your ideology. And then we have a bench, and then we can run better candidates in red states, and we can run more candidates in red parts of this state. Again, if we put some money together. I mean, I think of the billion with a B we spent on media in the Harris campaign. And if they had taken a million with an M and spread it around state house races, that's almost 10 grand a race.
Yeah.
You know, that's a respectable campaign in rural Michigan that lets you buy some signs, do some basic stuff, jumpstart your campaign. And you're not asking somebody to go lose to their local Republican 70-30 in some of these counties. And by the way, raise all the money to do that losing. That sucks. If we're going to ask people to be on the ballot and run a reasonable race in Michigan, we ought to throw some money at them. And on top of that, God, I would have killed for some Democratic sheriff candidates, you know, in Barry County, in Allegan County, my sheriff, who I like, because he's not, you know, the constitutional sheriff candidate that ran in this county, but still went up and endorsed Trump. Would have been really nice to have a Democrat to go give him some grief about that. And that's not free. You know, that's a $10,000, $20,000, $30,000 race. And this is America, and we could roll up that kind of money if we started working on it.
Agreed. Since I just have you here, I'm just going to be honest here. I'm just unsure of so many things where we are right now, Mark. I mean, we're talking about the need to connect with rural voters or to visit right-wing or center-right platforms and media and to focus on the working class, not to talk down to workers and appear as in many places as possible and to play offense. But yet, I just feel like while Democrats had their shortcomings this past election at times, I'm just not sure what the hell the solution is. And this is what I mean. I mean, when I had you on the last time, I think you said something like, you know, that Democrats should talk with the Farm Bureau and understand what's happening with the farming community and agribusiness and all that. I just had progressive Democratic State Representative Emily Diefendorf on a few weeks ago. And a lot of their district is in Ingham, Eaton, and Clinton counties, which, you know, a lot of those areas are rural. And Representative Diefendorf said that they made it a point to learn as much as possible about the ag industry, about about farming issues because they want to help all their constituents, of course. I mean, and Representative Diefendorf is all about helping small family farms to sell their produce at the local level, and they want to tackle food insecurity. And they also voted to allow farmers to have the right to use their property for renewable energy siting, property rights, which I thought were always essential to the farming community. Yet the Michigan Farm Bureau backed Representative Diefendorf's opponent. Now, Diefendorf won and pulled in a decent vote in the rural districts because of the hard work that they've done. But still, despite doing all that hard work for farmers in their district, Diefendorf still didn't get the backing of the Farm Bureau. I guess I'm at a loss sometimes when I see that stuff, and I don't exactly know what is the message, Mark. I mean, is it really economics, or is it simply more of a sociological thing? Is it a branding thing? Is it everything all put together? I don't know. I'll let you have the final word on all that.
Farm Bureau is a challenging organization to deal with, but they're not going anywhere. You know, I will stick with my message, Pat, that the important thing is showing up and interacting. I know Representative Diefendorf as well. And I can also tell you that at the Rural Caucus Summit we're going to have here April 10th through 12th up at the Kewadin Casino in Sault Ste. Marie, we're going to talk about things like this. And I've already invited Farm Bureau and the Michigan Agribusiness Association to show up.
Good.
They're going to be there. You know, we need to operate in the political environment as it is. And we can't pretend that Farm Bureau is going away, because I got to tell you, they're dug in pretty deep. Mm-hmm. I don't think they're going anywhere. I talked to them today about the summit. They were so damn excited that I called. They want to talk to us. I think there are so many people who are professionals in politics that would really like everybody to like get to know each other a little better and take the temperature down, you know, and it's not going to be them. You know, right now, Pat, I've been a substitute teacher on and off for the better part of 30 years now. And that's who's running for state party chair right now. It's substitute teacher. I want everybody to get along. I want everybody to get their business done. We'll deal with whatever's coming up, no matter what you got going. The Democrats are going to run their game, and it's going to be respectful. And also, I promise to make it as amusing as I possibly can. I'll lighten the mood whenever the opportunity presents, Pat.
That's okay. All right. Well, I'll tell you what. Thanks a lot for giving me more time than I asked for. I greatly appreciate it, Mark. If people would like to learn more about you and about your campaign to become the next Democratic chair, are there places they can go? I've mentioned your Facebook page already.
Yeah, that's what we got going on right now. We are not a high budget operation. Okay. Find us on Facebook at Mark for MDP Chair. Just remember, you do have to show up in person at your Michigan Democratic Party spring convention to vote, and you do need to be a member 30 days prior to voting.
Well, good luck to you. Thanks a lot for throwing your hat in the ring. As I said at the very beginning, we need voices like yours in the party. And hey, I just want to wish you good luck, and we'll be following what happens, okay?
I'll see you in Detroit.
A podcast devoted to intelligence, sanity, and freedom, or otherwise known as progressive politics. It's Left of Lansing with your host, Pat Johnston. Need to tell Pat where he's wrong? Or do you actually want to praise Pat? Leftoflansing@gmail.com is how to reach him. Here's Pat.
Thanks again to Mark Ludwig for giving his opinions and takes on the future of the Michigan Democratic Party and why he believes he could lead the party in a promising direction in the future as chair. I'll link to Mark's Facebook page so that way you can learn more about his candidacy. And former State Senator Curtis Hertel, community organizer Al Williams, and former UAW official Kevin Tolbert, who are also in the running for the position, the invitation is open for you to appear on Michigan's premier progressive podcast. Time now for the Left of Lansing Last Call. Well, 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 would you look at that? Well, all right, it's a podcast, so I guess you can't see it, but hear this, okay? Listen to the breaking news as I'm just recording this portion of the show. Detroit Mayor Mike Duggan just announced that he is running for governor as an independent. Because of course he is. I just mentioned him at the beginning of the episode by explaining how he was dead wrong when he said that the insurance lobbying-backed auto insurance quote-unquote reform bill did not save Detroiters the money that he claimed it would save them, and Detroit still has high auto insurance rates. He was dead wrong on that issue. Look, I think Duggan's done some decent things downtown, which I shared with you when I was in Detroit for the draft last spring. But what the hell's he doing? We've got an extreme right-wing Republican Party in the state that believes in authoritarianism and that also believes in hurting the working class for corporate interests, and who's all about hurting those they consider not like them. And Mike Duggan is running not as a Democrat, but as an independent. You know Mike Duggan, though. You know exactly why he's doing this, because he knew he wasn't going to dare run in a Democratic primary against possible opponents like Secretary of State Jocelyn Benson or Lieutenant Governor Garland Gilchrist or State Senator Mallory McMorrow or others. He was never going to get the footing that he needed to win that primary race. So now Mike Duggan, the opportunist that he always has been, is running as an independent, which means we've now got a now independent corporatist like Mike Duggan on one side, a likely corporate MAGA Republican on another side, and then you'll have a Democratic nominee on the other side of this whole triangle. It'll be a big decision on where the Michigan Democratic Party will be in 2 years. Will the party and the gubernatorial candidate adopt a more populist platform or remain a corporate-friendlier candidate? And will the party still be a more corporate-friendlier party? If you're Benson Gilchrist or whoever else, you'd be wise to appear as the true change candidate and go populist.
You're listening to the Left of Lansing podcast. The music you're hearing is by Wander Beats. To hear the latest project, check out Space Leopard on your favorite streaming site. Now back to our favorite progressive voice in Michigan, it's Pat Johnston.
That's going to do it for this edition of The Left of Lansing, and I still cannot wrap my head around what Mike Duggan just announced. But anyway, I'll have more to say on that later, but a change candidate he is not. Special thanks to the Michigan Democratic Party Rural Caucus Chair Mark Ludwig for spending some time on the show. I'll link to his Facebook page, and I will also link to David Dayton's piece from the American Prospect that I talked about in the opening segment. Big game for the Lions on Thursday night against the Packers, and if the Lions win it, they will clinch a playoff spot with still 4 more weeks to go in the regular season. What is happening? But please, Lions, please try to stay healthy out there, okay? And to all of you, please be careful shoveling all that snow across the state, especially those of you on the west and northwest side of the LP. Don't forget to follow me on Blue Sky and subscribe to the show on the YouTube. Until next time, remember, take the battle to them. Thank you, Michigan!
The Left of Lansing podcast was produced by Pat Johnston, written by Pat Johnston, researched by Pat Johnston, edited by Pat Johnston, and hosted by, yes, Pat Johnston. Technical assistance by Dr. Heather. And thanks to our good friend Kirsten for the awesome podcast logo. Remember to visit leftoflansing.com for more news and information. Thanks again for listening to the Left of Lansing podcast.